Wow, it's been quite a week at the No Film School podcast. We have a lot coming at you between NAB, Everything Everywhere All at Once, and now Robert Eggers, writer-director of The Northman, which just hit theaters this last weekend. I'm George Edelman, editor-in-chief at No Film School and host of the No Film School podcast. And our guest today, Robert Eggers, is one of the most interesting, detail-oriented, and humble yet also confident filmmakers I've ever spoken to. I love The Northman. I'm a history buff. I loved the deep dive, the fascinating attention to detail, the relationship between folklore, Shakespeare, theater, cinema, Viking movies. It all kind of flows together into this amazing experiential movie. Unlike most things you've ever seen, you're going to go in expecting certain things. The movie will probably subvert that, and you will definitely be amazed because there are certain sequences that will just blow your mind. I've said that a lot about movies lately, but it's been quite a year so far, and we're not even halfway in. So anyway, here we go with Robert Eggers. We talk about a lot of cool stuff, and he drops some of the coolest advice I've heard in a long time about how to approach being a director on set and collaborating with everybody else there. It's an insight I've honestly never heard before. So here we go. Hi, Robert. Thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure.
The movie is incredible. It's unlike anything I've seen. There's a lot I want to talk about, but I'll try to pick a couple things. First off, there's such an attention to detail throughout the movie and the specificity of the period, trying to give us the experience of being there, historical accuracy, everything about that. Can you tell us a little bit about why that was important to you as a filmmaker and how far you were willing to go to get everything to feel like we were there, to take us, to transport us there?
Yeah, I mean, look, historical accuracy doesn't matter at all. You know, Coppola's Dracula and Peter Brook's King Lear, like, and any, like, virtually any Pasolini movie, you know, they're really transportive, beautifully designed things that are not accurate. But, you know, I would have been a historian if I wasn't interested in telling stories. I don't know. This stuff really interests me, and it's become like a technique and how I just approach things, from the writing to every single thing you see on the screen is all based in research. And if it's not, I had the privilege of working with the world's finest historians and archaeologists in the field of Viking studies. And if there was something I couldn't find in a book, I would be bugging these guys, and asking them, like, well, what about this? What about this? And some, I don't know. You know, the Vikings years ago, like, we don't know everything. And any time where there was a sort of gray area of knowledge, we're trying to fill it in still with things we do know instead of just an invention. And I think, like, it's just something that's pleasurable for me. But I think that it also is very helpful when I'm working with my collaborators, because we all know what the bar is, and that's accuracy. And it also makes decision making quicker, because it's not like, what is this chair that tells us about this character's, like, inner state? It's like, you know, you look at the archaeological evidence of chairs, and you choose the one that matches the character, and then you say, let's make a museum quality replica of that chair. And partially what that does is that enables the film to have potentially more details, because we don't have to, like, spend time inventing things. So we can, and the more an atmosphere exists with an accumulation of details. And so we have, like, a whole lot more this way, potentially.
And it does some of the world building for you, kind of, in that way. Like, it's part of the world building. Is that specificity?
Yeah. And, you know, but the other thing is, I'm interested in trying to articulate the Viking mind, the mind of the people who are in this period. And I don't think I can, like, entirely do that also without depicting how they depicted their own physical world, you know, because that comes from their mind, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You have a background in theater. There's a relationship between this story and one of the greatest works of theater and the inspiration behind that work. So I'm curious, from a writing standpoint, like when you get started and you're looking at the original Norse story, folktale that evolved into what would eventually become or inspire Hamlet, there are moments in this movie that I feel like, oh, that's a version of Behind the Curtains with Gertrude. That's like how much did your being, you know, steeped in theater knowledge and the play and this also discovering this myth, how did you weave it all together? It feels like a lot. So like, was that challenging? Was it fun? Was it?
Yeah, but I mean, some of this stuff like sometimes happens by accident. And you know, Sean is also, my co-writer is also very literate, to put it minorly. So for example, I really wanted the sorcerer, the he-witch in Iceland, to have a severed head that was preserved with herbs and could prophesy things, because and that's based on Mimir, who's a head that Odin had. But then Sean was the one who made him Hamer, who is his fool as a child, which is then, so then that becomes a reference to like Yorick's skull. You know, right. Some of those things just kind of happen, like one thing inspires another thing, and you know, and then we're nerds, so we're.
So on the same vein, or kind of moving more in talking about theater, there's a presentational quality sometimes to these shots. Like there's a long shot through the bushes and we see the boat coming. That kind of like, you have a style that sometimes gives us like, you know, we're there, long takes, you know. There's a really long take that's a Viking raid that feels like this just absolutely insane thing to pull off and is an insane experience. Can you just talk about, we're a filmmaking outlet and so many of our readers are fascinated by the nuts and bolts, and listeners, talk about deciding to do that and how you pull something like that off and all the challenges. It's on its own piece, just a piece on its own, that sequence.
So yeah, the raid of the Slavic village was definitely the most complex sequence, because it had, you know, the most extras and stuntmen and horses and cows, chickens, geese, pigs,
weapons,
you know, mud. And it just takes, I mean, look, it just takes a lot of planning. I mean, weirdly, like that, there are other sequences that were more complicated on the day or more difficult to pull off on the day because we didn't give them as much tender, loving care. I mean, this was the thing that we were tackling kind of head on from the beginning, because we knew that this set piece was so important. But, you know, everything in this film is meticulously planned, and we storyboarded this to death and rehearsed it to death. And of course, you know, I mean, the village is designed for the raid. I don't know how many times, you know, we were scouting this location that was just a bunch of posts in the ground marking where each building was. And, you know, Jaren looking through the viewfinder, my DOP, saying like, we need to move this house like 20 degrees, like counterclockwise. And we need to move this shed like 10 feet to the right or whatever. In order so that we can see like every single beat we need to see in this sequence. But it was fun, you know, very fun, very challenging, but also like very exciting.
When you were crafting the story did you decide there's got to be a moment that like you were like, we're going to show you what Vikings do, like what a Viking raid is, what they were doing all the time during this period, and we're going to do it this way, and I'm going to set this up. So like you had it in your mind that that was going to be, the audience would experience this sequence. It would be like a, and it had to be done that way, right? Like it was kind of always part of the plan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself.
So like, that's how it felt. It was like, okay, we've got to be introduced to what Vikings are all about, right? The historic, the way you talked about the details and the historical accuracy, is it inspiring and fun? Is it kind of like where you get the juice for the whole story? Is like, I'm going to dig into all these details and find things?
Yeah. You know, I mean, the spear throw that, like at the beginning of that sequence where like a guard on a palisade throws a spear, Alex catches it and throws it back to him and kills him. Like that's from a saga, you know, like, you know, the end of that sequence when Alex rips some guy's throat out with his teeth is from a saga. Like it's, you know, I have no ideas. I just,
but the ideas, like history is so rich. Yeah. It's so much richer than there's even time to find for every story imaginable. And even knowing a little bit about Viking history at that time myself, I was like, oh my God, there's so much I'm curious about. Like if this camera just turned a little, like were there, I assume because you did it in the movie, there were like villages or outposts on Iceland that they were starting to colonize around that time.
Yeah. I mean, it was sort of the Wild West in some ways, this like frontier, like territory that was semi-lawless. Yeah.
I'm going to ask, kind of shifting gears a little quickly to sort of perspective in the story. We're very much in his perspective the whole time, but which is like Hamlet, but it felt like the uncle, you made him a sympathetic character in a lot of ways. And that final duel was really challenging in a way because it's not as clear cut as you think it's going to be at the very beginning when it's a revenge story. Can you tell me about finding that in the writing? Or where that inspiration came from?
Like it's from the Icelandic sagas, the you know, the like Gisli, Grettir, so, you know, some of these saga heroes are anti-heroes, and some of them are outlaws, some of them are psychopaths, some of them are doing things that are completely dishonorable things in the Viking age, but they're the hero of the saga, and the saga is named after them. And then sometimes the so-called villains are good fathers and good husbands, and having that like gray area is interesting, you know, to me.
Yeah, it definitely puts it aside. I feel like you sort of give us the imprint of a Braveheart or a Gladiator, but you're like, it's going to be a lot more complicated emotionally.
Yeah, I mean, there's no you know, Commodus and King of England are bad to the bone, like. Nothing redeemable.
Yeah. I've seen quotes where you talked about like this was an extremely challenging thing to do and to pull off. But it would be a shame if you didn't try to do it sort of like this again. Like not like we need the sequel, but I'm saying like deep dive into something specific or period or
I've been saying a lot, like including a lot of interviews, kind of saying that I want to make something a bit smaller next with a little bit less pressure. But that doesn't mean that I don't want to do something that's like a complete challenge. If I'm not afraid that I'm going to fail, like it's not going to work, you know. And it's enjoyable to stretch myself and to learn. Like it's not enjoyable to like be comfortable.
Has that always kind of been your guiding light, that if it's not going to make me feel like, if I don't think I might fail, I'm not going to be jumping into this?
Well, I guess it's just, I'm coming up with ideas that are too hard for me to do anyway. So,
so it's inevitable as a part of your process.
Yeah.
The movie is incredible, and I know we don't have a ton of time, but I'm curious about choosing, you know, you shot on film. Did you get any pushback on anything like that, or did you have to fight?
The studio would have preferred that we didn't financially, but they did not really push back on that at all. There wasn't really pushback on any of the major creative choices. And I'm like, I'm incredibly lucky that that's the case. I mean, I got to make a six camera Viking epic. That's like incredibly rare. I mean, it's rare to make a film of this scale that's not a comic book movie these days. So I'm grateful.
Yeah. And that applies to, you know, when you were doing a lot of these specifics, getting as specific as you could into like what a set, what a location looks like, or what the sequences, the battle sequences are like. Did you ever run up against like, oh, we're going to have to find another way to do this or things like that? You know, like we're up against it and we're in a limited portion. Or did you really feel like I'm going to do it the way I want to do it?
It's the latter. You know, there were times when like the sort of parental figures on set were not super pumped. But that's okay, because, you know, we're all happy in the end.
Yeah. No, I mean, it worked. Do you have advice or like, or do you have a way to talk about whatever is inner reserves you have that make you think like, I know they're not pumped, but we're going to do this. I believe in it.
It's going to work. I mean, that's your job as a director. Like, it's your job as a director to know when, like, because look, the director is usually the least experienced person on set, unless you're like Ridley Scott, because, you know, how many movies Quentin Tarantino made, right? But how many movies... Yeah. Bob Richardson made, right? And how many movies has like the grip made, right? So you're always kind of in a position of, when do I listen to all these people around me who literally know way more than I do about filmmaking? Like, they literally do. And when do I need to know when like it has to be my way, even if my way seems wrong to everybody.
Crazy. That's awesome. I want to end on that because that's excellent advice to everybody, but also that's just a gold nugget. I'm glad you got your way and we got the movie. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you so much to Robert for coming on the podcast. Thank all of you for listening, as always. We've been throwing a lot of stuff out there this week because it's just such a busy time. So keep your eyes peeled for all the NAB coverage we're doing on the podcast and the website, www.nofilmschool.com. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. We're posting stuff everywhere. But be sure to also keep coming through these podcasts because the list includes all these great interviews we're doing. This one, as well as with the Daniels and the director of photography and editor on Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is one of the greatest movies in a very, very long time. But it was so cool talking to Robert. I was amazed by his honesty and insight into the feeling that as a director on set, you are the least experienced person there. And how that plays into both your confidence, but also your humility and your ability to learn and listen, and when you need to be stubborn, and all of that. And he honestly does a great job of pulling it off. So go check out The Northman if you haven't already, or see it again, and be sure to keep listening to the No Film School podcast. Thanks so much.